last time, just to, you know, get your sense of your experience and the work that you did. If at any time you sort of need to stop me for a second, take a break, just let me know. I know it's kind of tough for me, especially talking on the phone a lot. So first off, this is an interview that we're doing with Francis Trainer. Calling him on the phone. I'm in Minnesota, and he's in Maine. And we're just going to talk a little bit about your experiences, sort of with the SEC, how you came to work for the SEC, the positions and the work that you did there, and also the work that you did after you left there too. So just give me, Francis, if you would, just give me a little bit of your background, you know, how you got started at the SEC, where you were living, you know, how you came to work there to begin with.
It was the luck of the draw. I had taken a civil service test in 1935, and in 1937, I received an inquiry from the Civil Service Commission if I was still interested in federal employment to fill out the enclosed affidavit and have it notified. Well, I did that, but I never mailed it in. And a year later, I found it in one of my drawers, so I figured I got nothing to lose. I dropped it in the mail, and about 2 weeks later, I was told to report to the Securities and Exchange Commission on the 11th of July, 1938. And it could have told me to go to the Internal Revenue, it could have told me to go to the post office, but it was the SEC, and that was a fortunate thing for me, because the SEC had some future in it, whereas some of these old agencies, you just sat there and rotted in those days.
Right.
It was the heart of the Depression. And so I went down to Washington, and I had a job in New York. I was an office boy in a law firm, but I went down to Washington and reported in. I had planned to try out Washington for 3 weeks on my vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was going to come home. And the office manager who was in charge of all the office boys heard about that, and he called me in and he said, "I don't want to see you back here."
The office manager where you work in the law firm.
I was working for Mitchell Taylor.
Right.
In the Marsh. And, you know, he kind of put his hand on my back and shoved me out the door. And so I stayed down there. And I recall how hot it was. Oh, my, it was ever hot in Washington.
You went down the middle of July, evidently, then.
Yes.
Yeah, not a nice time to be in D.C.
Well, there was no air conditioning except in the bars and the movies.
Right. Even in your SEC office building, no air conditioning.
Oh, my, yes, that was a... If you worked at night there, you would put a fan under your seat to try to cool you off.
Right, right.
And anyway, I went in there as a messenger, which was the government's name for an office boy.
Mm-hmm.
And in September, I started going to school over at George Washington University.
That's something you could do in the evenings?
Yeah.
Okay.
The commission, fortunately enough, was only 3 blocks from the school, so you could walk right over. And school classes began at 5 o'clock, and you got out of commission at 4:30. The hours in those days was 9 to 4:30. It was a 39-hour week, which is even less than they're working today.
Right.
They work 40 hours.
Right.
And I slowly... Well, when I got to the... to the commission, put in a big pool with about 35 other young men who had similar experiences, all messengers.
What kind of stuff did you do? I mean, what was your job there as a messenger?
As a messenger, well, you were, an office boy. A phone call would come in to move a typewriter from the ninth floor down to the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the head messenger was a cut above us at $1,200 a year. We were getting $1,080 a year.
$1,080 a year.
Yes.
Okay.
He would he kept track of whose turn it was to go, and he said he'd go on up to 10th, room 1059 and pick up typewriter, take it down at 207. And then you'd come back to the pool and get in line again.
All right.
We did the same thing at Mitchell Taylor, except we had a better working conditions in a Wall Street law firm than they did in the SEC.
Right.
And so after about 2 weeks there, I got sent up to the Public Utility Division. Each division, in addition to the messenger pool, each division had assigned two or three messengers, and I was one of two up there.
So there was like a general pool, but then there was also some specific assignments of messengers for each division.
Each division.
Okay, okay.
And so I went up there for... After 6 months, you were then eligible to apply for the clerk jobs. And they were put up on the bulletin board.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the jobs that the messengers were getting, clerk jobs, were up in the docket division. But the administrative assistant who was in the next office to me advised me not to apply for any of those, that she was setting up a job and she was going to stick me in it. And it was a grade two.
Okay.
So that was jumped me from 1080 to 1440.
So there's somebody, that this administrative assistant was somebody that was in the Public Utilities Division?
Yeah, she was.
And she knew you? She liked you and she wanted you to stick around?
Yes.
Okay, okay.
And so she had an opening there and she was flushing it up. And she told me not to be in a hurry to get out of messenger status.
Right.
Like everybody was.
Sort of gave you a heads up that there's something opening up here. Okay.
And so I waited around for about 5 extra months as a messenger, which to me seemed like a long period in my wanting to get some more money.
Right, because you went 5 months with... At the 1080 salary, when you maybe could have got the 1440.
Yeah, so I could get the 1440.
Right, right.
1260 up in the docket.
Right, right.
And so I got that job, and I was, I guess I was called an accounting clerk.
Okay.
And I went into one of the, at that time, the prosecution of the Public Utility Holding Company Act of 1935 had just started to move. Nothing had been done on it because they were waiting around to see if it was going to be constitutionally upheld.
Right. So there was a case kind of pending, and
yes.
Once that case came down, then
they started to
gear up.
Started to move.
Okay. And you were really there about the time when the case came down and things started to gear up.
Yes.
Yeah, so you were in on sort of the ground floor of the real active participation of the agency, the division specifically, about enforcing this act.
It wasn't a holding company act.
Right.
Well, I guess in the fall of 1939, the utility division then started to take on... what they used to call experts, and well, they took on some more accountants, and took on an analyst, and took on lawyers, and to get this thing really rolling. They've been sitting there holding their breath for a while, to see whether it was going to work.
Right.
And these people did not come off civil services; they were hired right off the street, with backgrounds in engineering firms and accounting firms. Who had applied for jobs in the commission and were now being called.
Because these folks were needed to really assess,
yeah,
right, to assess all these holding companies and all the stuff that went along with the prosecution of the act.
Yes.
Okay. What did you do as an accounting clerk?
Well, the first job I had, I sat in with about 5 other accounting clerks, and we were going through... there were different statements companies had to file, and we used to review them. As I recall, we just looked them over kind of casually, and then, you know, sure that there wasn't anything really that buddy called. The statements were doing what the regulation required.
Right. So it was a matter of sort of making sure that they follow the rules in terms of actually filing first.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And then, so when they got really hot into this prosecution of the act, then they reorganized the whole division.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up in a division headed up by a fellow named Carl C. Brown. And these units consisted of about three lawyers and two accountants and financial analyst and two or three engineers. So there were about 11 professional people
mm-hmm.
in each unit, and two secretaries and two or three accounting clerks like myself.
Right.
And we were like the gophers, so to speak.
Okay.
They were just starting to look at the companies, and then each one of these units was assigned four or five public utility systems.
So that your group of people, this group that they would basically assign you, like four or five of these public holding companies, and you basically would stay with those and follow them through all the way through the filing, and then
yeah.
and then whatever needed to be done. And analysis and that kind of stuff. Yeah,
he would charge with the body commission to come up with a plan to reorganize these systems, break up the holding company systems. That's what the act was all about.
Right. And so coming up with a plan, was that something that your group would do?
Well, yes.
Okay.
All of the groups, there were about, I guess, 8 or 10 groups in
right.
in the utility division, and all of the groups were assigned certain companies' systems to analyze and propose a way to break up. The act only permitted, I had what they call a grandfather clause, it only permitted, I think, two layers of holding companies.
Right.
Whereas in the old days, the utility companies, some had 5, 6, 8 layers.
Right. Right.
And it was considered, and the parent company was sucking up money from down below, and nothing was going to the common stockholders.
Right.
And that was considered part of the cause of the stock market crash.
Of the depression, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So your charge was to come up with, look at all the information, all the financial stuff, how the organization, how these holding companies were organized, and then come up with some sort of a plan to sort of reorganize and break them up and reorganize them. And then what would you do with that plan? What would happen after you did that?
Well, the plan would go to the commission.
Okay.
The commission thought it was a good plan, and they notified the companies. You know, you got so many years to start working on this plan. Well, of course, the companies didn't like it, and they would fight it.
Okay.
And it, you know, it would drag out for 5, 6, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stockholders of the company, the common stockholders, they were going to come out better off than they were. And so they'd hire lawyers to represent them.
Right,
and
right.
There'd be units of stockholders, each trying to get a piece of the action.
So this sounds like sort of a very contentious kind of a
well, it was, yes.
Right.
And anyway, but the county clerk in one of these units, we were more gophers to these guys, to these professional people. They had to get information from, say, the Federal Power Commission, which
mm-hmm.
was across the street, even down to the to how much the efficiency of some of the utility generating companies. And so we'd be sent over. I used to be sent over to the Federal Power Commission, and sit there for days on end culling information out of the filings over there.
Right. And that was one of the things you did, is go over there, physically go over there and get information.
Yeah.
Bring it back to the
engineer,
experts in your area.
You know, hey, Frank, I want you to go over to Federal Power Commission and look this company up and give me a breakdown on it.
Right.
And so that's what I would do. And then I'm trying to think what else I did in that, as an accounting clerk in that unit.
Let me ask you one thing, Francis. One of the things that we've sort of come to understand about the early SEC was that they were really an information-intensive agency. They had to get this kind of information. I mean, they were one of the few early agencies that relied upon experts, expertise, information. That was part and parcel of what they had to do.
That's it.
So the work that you're doing here, although you keep referring to it as a gopher, actually was really at the heart of what the agency really had to do in order to implement the law.
Well, it got the ball rolling.
Right, right.
And then out of that would come a plan to reorganize, say, one system at a time.
Right.
And that took months to... And there was kind of a competitiveness in it between the units as to who would get the first plan approved by the commission.
So like almost like a friendly competition.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I recall this Carl Brown, he was determined that our unit would be the one to come up with, and I think we were working on United Light and Power. And we sent a plan of reorganization up. He did, and it got kicked back. They didn't like what we had proposed, I guess. I wasn't privy to somebody.
Right, right.
But, we had to not start all over, but to revamp something.
Right. What was, you mentioned that there's sort of this friendly competition. What was the just overall attitude of the folks that worked there at the SEC? I mean, what did you think about the work you were doing?
The place was all gung-ho. Everybody thought what we were doing was necessary, even at the lowest level. But, you know, we were doing something that was needed to help get the country back on its feet.
Because like you mentioned earlier, you recognized, at least believed that this, at least the way these holding companies were set up, were part of the cause of the Depression.
Well, if you were, you know, at my level, I didn't really understand that aspect of it.
Right.
I didn't have enough education.
Right.
To realize that these things were going on, and I was just a kid in the 20s.
Right.
And didn't know what the cause of the Depression was. I just knew that all of a sudden I was raised by an aunt and uncle, but my uncle was only working 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
As against when he was in the mid-20s, he worked 5 days a week.
Right.
Things were being cut back, and people were being laid off.
So you saw the consequence of it, but weren't quite capable of putting the answers together. But even not knowing that, working at the SEC, you sort of all had a feeling that you were doing something that was important.
Yes.
And even at the lowest level.
Yes.
Okay.
And there was a gung-ho attitude, so to speak, especially in the utility division, and I guess throughout the whole commission of the registration division, which later became the corporation finance division.
Right.
Were requiring that under the 33 Act, that when you want to issue, we put out an issue of stock, you had to register with the SEC.
Right.
Get approval of your prospectus. And so I think throughout the commission itself, there was a gung-ho attitude of doing something that was, necessary and helpful.
Right. Okay. Did your division have like much contact with registration, or were they sort of separate divisions that did your own thing?
Well, they were more or less separate.
Okay.
The only time we had contact with them is when a utility company would have had a file under the 33 Act and A, putting out a what do you call it, a new issue of stock.
Right.
Or putting out a proxy statement.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that...
Then there'd be some overlap.
There'd be some overlap.
Okay. Okay. How long did you stay in that public utility holding company division?
Well, I was there from 39 to 41, and then 41 the war came, and I enlisted in the Navy, and I didn't get back until January of 46.
Okay, so you were in the Navy from 41 to 46.
And an awful lot happened in the SEC while I was gone.
Right.
None of these plans had really moved out. And I came back and they still had the units, so to speak. And I got... I didn't get put in one of those operating units, so to speak. I got put in a unit that was more or less doing... some backup work for the operating units.
So when you came back from the Navy, you went back to the SEC?
I went back to the SEC.
Okay, and you were doing something in a different area.
Yeah, but I went back to the Public Utility Division.
Okay.
And I worked for one of the fellows who had been in Brown's unit with me. He was one of the experts. He had moved up to become a unit chief.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Spencer. And... weren't really doing much, you know. We weren't doing what they were doing up in the units that were chopping up these companies.
Right.
And most of the companies' plans had been approved, and they were knee deep in reorganizing the holding company system.
Right.
And so. In a in an effort then to I guess they found out they had maybe a couple more people than they needed, and they asked anybody would like to transfer to the Corporation Finance Division step forward. So I put my hand up that I'd like to go to the Corporation.
Because you were doing this in this other division where you sort of indicated there wasn't much going on.
Wasn't much going on.
And you needed some action, obviously.
Well, I felt my time was being wasted.
Right, okay.
I wasn't in one of the units that was, you know, really moving.
Right. So you did transfer to the Corporation Finance Division?
To the Corporation Finance Division, I guess, in 1947.
Okay. And what did you do there?
Well,
had you received your degree by then?
Oh, I received my degree early when I went into the Navy. I was about halfway through school.
Okay.
And you know, taking 9 credits, which was the most GW would allow you to take it going part time.
Right.
Would take you quite a while to get a degree, but I went in the Navy. I went into an intelligence organization called the Office of Censorship, and so I stayed. I was stationed in Washington D.C., so I kept going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And, by going to school and summer school, I stayed there until. November of 43.
Okay.
And fortunately, by that time, I was in the last 9 hours of completing the degree. So I got the degree.
Okay.
And I got shipped out, and eventually wound up on a destroyer in the Pacific.
Which destroyer?
The Isherwood. Isherwood.
And what sort of combat was the Isherwood involved in?
Its number was 520. It was in the... I picked it up in the South Pacific. And by that time, the war was I got out there in time to be involved in the landings at Lingayen Gulf and the campaign at Okinawa.
Towards the end of the war, but you still had a year and a half or so ago.
Yes.
Okay.
I recall when I was an ensign, I went out to relieve some fella, and he told me, "We haven't fired a shot at the enemy since we've been in this thing."
Mm-hmm.
Well, things happened when I got on board.
It didn't take long, I bet, after you got on board for some shots to be fired.
Well, the Japs were knee-deep in their kamikaze program.
Right.
And we had planes all over the place, both that going up to Lingayen Gulf and especially at Okinawa.
Right.
Lost a lot of destroyers.
Right, right. I mean, that was heavy, heavy battle. So.
Yes.
So
we were one of the lucky ones that we got hit, but we survived.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot, unfortunately, that didn't.
Oh, my God. On our ship, we lost about 50 guys.
Yeah. Well, that was a tough time, but absolutely essential for the Navy to sort of finish that operation out. We would have been in that war for another 5 years. So.
Oh my! I just read an article recently that Okinawa convinced Truman to drop the bomb.
Yeah, I think they made an assessment, or he had some people make an assessment of what a sort of a landing on the mainland would cost us in terms of troops.
Yeah,
and it was astounding. He wasn't going to do that. He wasn't going to give up that many troops to land that. So, Francis, what'd you do in the Corporation Finance Division? What were your job? What was your job there?
I had to go through a learning process.
Right.
Because it was a totally new work to me. We had the Corporation Finance Division was involved in prosecuting the 1933 Act, which was called, Truth in Securities, where
right.
they had to bear their souls in their prospectus as to what they were going to do with the money.
Right.
They gave a prospectus to a prospective buyer of their securities. They had to tell the company, or rather the individual, what they were going to do with their money.
Right.
And so we had... They would file, as they called it, and send you all this. And they had little units in the Corporation Finance Division consisting of, I guess we had about three lawyers and about seven or eight financial analysts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had an engineering section, if required engineering analysis, and you had a certain amount of time to hold up the companies. For example, after the file had been filed, or after the prospectus had been filed and given to the analyst, he had about 10 days in which to get out a letter of deficiencies, or the filing would become effective.
Right.
So you were really racing against time to analyze the thing and come up with your comments on it to send to the company about what you didn't like about it.
Right.
And then the proxy statements, you only had 5 days.
So in both cases, you had some pretty clear, specific deadlines that you were up against.
Yeah, and sometimes in those days right after the war, there were quite a few stock offerings.
Right.
The stock market started to heat up.
Right.
And there were proxy fights, which was something new. And so... And sometimes you'd have two or three on your desk at one time.
Right.
There was no fooling around. You really had to get with the program.
So you went from a division where there wasn't much to do into a division where there was an awful lot to do. Well,
the unit I was in, yeah.
Yeah. The units, I'm sorry, yeah.
And once you got the hang of it, though, then it was interesting work.
Right. And you'd gotten your degree. Was your degree in accounting?
Yes.
Okay.
Over at UW.
Right. So you stayed with this division. About how long did you stay with this unit?
I stayed with them until 1951, and I got recalled in the Navy.
Okay.
Korean War came on, and I stayed in the Navy Reserve, and I got recalled, and I didn't get back to the commission until August of 1953.
And when you came back?
When I came back, I thought for sure I'd go back to the unit I worked for. I worked for a fellow called Al, named Al King.
Right.
But the commission disappointed me, but put me back in the utility division.
The division you'd been in before that didn't have much action in it.
Well, it
wasn't using your talents, at least.
Well, then I wound up in the same situation.
Right.
And so I had an offer from the Navy, where I had been stationed, to come work for them. And so I realized that half of the U.S. budget was going into the Defense Department.
Right.
And the SEC was not the fair-haired boy it had once been, and the Roosevelt had been the fair-haired boy.
Right.
You had Corcoran and Cohen and those guys. And so I took this offer from the Defense Department and went over to work in the Bureau of Supplies and Accounts.
Okay. Let me ask you, do you know why the SEC didn't, why didn't they put you back in that division where you'd been working? It seemed to be that would be the most logical choice.
I don't know what their...
No one ever really explained it to you?
No, this was a decision made in the personnel department.
Okay. Somebody didn't obviously know the work you'd been doing, and... I mean, it seemed like it would be more efficient, certainly, to put you back in that position.
I was enjoying that work.
Right.
I'd gotten into it.
They didn't ask you about where you wanted to go or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Somebody made it. Disappointing. Yeah, it sounds like it. Somebody made some sort of choice without really considering either what was best for you or the SEC, it seems like. Okay. Let me ask you just a couple questions. I know that we talked in the past. Did you meet your wife when she was at the SEC?
Yeah, she worked in the same Carl Brown's unit. She was Brown's secretary.
Okay. Tell me just a little bit about how you met her, and I know that you got married and had a long marriage. And tell me a little bit about how you met. You said you told me once before there was a lot of sort of office romances at the SEC.
Yes, there was. First, I met her when I was a messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Brown had an office up the hall for me, and I used to take their stuff in and out. And I recall he was out to lunch one day, and very brashly I sat at his desk and put my feet up. And she said, "Man, I wish you'd get out of here. Mr. Brown's going to come back, and I'll be in hot water." And sure enough, Brown did come back.
Did he catch you with your feet on the desk?
And I leaped up and got out of there and left her to take the brunt of the attack. Where's that guy? And what's he doing here with his feet on my desk?
But I'm sure she remembered you.
And but I didn't. I was only 21 then. I was looking to get married.
Right.
I was going to school. It was expensive as heck going to school, and with the pay I was getting.
Right.
And so I didn't really get serious about it. Then I wound up working for Brown and working with this girl. And so we started to... We both had the same birth dates.
Oh, really? And what was your wife's name?
Her name was Martha Stuckel.
Okay.
And some fellow in the office with me in Brown, and they thought that we could have on our birthday, we should go out and have a couple of beers that night.
Mm-hmm.
And so he organized. He got a date, and the four of us went out, and I started going with her. And we got married in April of 42, shortly after I went in the Navy.
Okay. And did she continue to work at the SEC after that?
When the commission moved to Philadelphia, which was in January and February of 1942.
During the war years.
Yeah.
Right.
She didn't want to go to Philadelphia. She got a job in industry, so to speak, in Washington.
Okay.
A non-government job.
All right. And when she was working as Brown's secretary, you know what she was making?
She was making $16.20. She was a grade 3.
Okay, so she was making substantially more than either the office boys or even the second position that you had.
Yes.
Okay. Just give me a sense of what sort of pay scale they had.
She used to throw up to me. Well, none of the girls came in at the pay level the messages came in.
Right.
There were no girl messages.
Right. So there was a lot of secretaries who were doing work that were making a lot more than a lot of the boy or male messengers were.
Yes.
Okay. Were there a lot of women working in the SEC at the time?
Enough, yeah.
Okay. So there was a pretty good mix?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of file clerks and a lot of secretaries.
Okay. Who was the chairman at the time when you started?
I think, William O. Douglas.
Douglas, and then he left to go to the court?
He went to court, yes. And then oddly enough, he was running right behind Truman in that selection to be the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the political decision on Roosevelt's part, although Roosevelt liked Douglas.
Right.
And then behind him came Jerry Frank.
Frank, okay.
And Frank went up to be a justice in the Southern District of the U.S.
Right.
New York.
Right.
And then I can't remember who became chairman then.
There were a lot of heavy hitters on that in that SEC when you were there. I mean, people who eventually became very, very prominent Americans.
There were, I recall an article in Life magazine shortly after the war began, and it showed, the top 10 or top 20 most influential people in prosecuting the war at that time.
Right.
And there were about 7 or 8 faces in there who had been in the SEC.
Right.
Douglas and Fortas and Leon Henderson.
Right.
And
this was an agency that had a particular job to do, but it also attracted, it did attract the best talent in the country.
It did, yeah.
And part of it, I think, is because, you've described this sort of gung-ho, this very enthusiastic atmosphere that this is an agency that did things.
Yeah.
I mean, you felt that you were actually making some change, doing good.
Douglas wrote a book called Go East, Young Man.
Mm-hmm.
He came from out in Washington State, I believe.
Right, Yakima.
Yeah, okay. And he was only in his early 30s when he came in here as chairman.
Right.
And Ford, as I recall, was became Supreme Court Justice. He was an assistant director in the commission when I was there. He was about 28 years old at
mm-hmm.
most, and he wore a pork pie hat with the front turned up, and he looked like a college sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to tell a story about him. I was a messenger there in the utility division, and I had a service. His office, go up there and pick up the papers and take them where they were supposed to go. Anyway, I got involved with bringing him a half pint of milk every day for, I guess he probably was nursing an ulcer or
mm-hmm.
had ulcers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to pay for the milk myself, and then I'd get reimbursed at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And, 1 week I only got 20 cents, and I said to the girl, "You owe me a nickel." She said, "Well, Mr. Fortas wasn't in on Friday." I said, "Well, nobody told me, but I got snipped for that nickel."
That's what it costs for the milk.
Yeah.
On a daily basis, yeah. The I've heard a lot of people who've talked about the SEC, certainly the early SEC, and how it grew from the time you started until the time you sort of left. I mean, could you just talk just briefly about sort of the growth that you saw in terms of numbers? Was it, you know?
Well, I think when I first went there, the number that sticks in my head was about 720 employees
mm-hmm.
in the whole commission.
Right.
And even when I left, it wasn't, you know, it didn't get that big. When Eisenhower came in, he wasn't that hot for what the SEC was up to.
Right.
Stiff-necked Republican. The Republicans, I guess, weren't were sympathetic to the companies. And so they didn't take on a lot of people.
Right.
When we moved back from... every once in a while, there'd be a reduction in force in the government, and the SEC would have to lay off a few people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's still even today a relatively small agency number-wise,
uh-huh.
but its responsibilities are enormous. I mean, if you think about the number of employees the SEC had when you started, I imagine any one of those holding companies maybe had 5 or 10 times that number.
Oh, my, yes. And, you know, the heavy hitters in all
right.
That.
I mean, they...
Commonwealth of Southern, which was one of the companies that we had to monitor, had Wendell Willkie.
Right.
Who was a presidential candidate in 1940.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, he was an arrogant bastard in that whenever he came into town on commission work, he wouldn't come down to our unit. Most of the other companies, their representatives came right into our unit there to see Brown. He would go up to see the commission, and then Brown would be summoned up to the
mm-hmm. So he thought he was a little above just going right to Brown.
That's right.
Okay.
And he started out just as an Indiana lawyer. You know?
Right, right.
But he was pretty heavy as a president of a utility company, a whole system, you know.
Right.
He's all over the universe.
Right. I think if I remember right, his was an enormous enterprise.
It was, yes.
And it was one of them, I think, that the SEC ended up actually breaking up.
They broke up those companies.
Right.
And the operating companies went out on their own and made millions and did wonders for the stockholders.
Right. So in the end, he may not have come down to see Brown, but at some point he had to face the fiddle.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good. Well, you've given me an awful lot of information, and I really appreciate what you've done, Francis. Is there anything else, you know, just any other experiences, anything you want to say about your experiences at the SEC? I mean, you obviously were back and forth, did a lot of stuff there in the early years. There aren't very many people certainly around today that can tell us the kinds of the stories and experiences that were part and parcel of the early SEC life. Anything else you want to add?
Well, I was proud of working for the SEC once I learned what they were doing.
Right.
And I kind of became part of the commission's batting order. But, you know, he told people you worked for the SEC, and then you did.
Mm-hmm. I can tell it's still a point of pride for you today, despite the fact that you maybe weren't utilizing your last job there, but it's still part of your experience that you're proud of.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's one other thing that I want to ask you, because I think I talked to a few other folks about this who worked in the early SEC, and they talk about sort of government service. And, you know, I know nowadays people always sort of, especially with the hurricane, I mean, everyone wants to blame everything that goes wrong on, you know, the government can't do anything right. But the people that I've talked to that worked at the SEC, early SEC, and very, very proud of being government employees. They felt what they were doing was not just a job, but they were doing something important for the country.
Well, my kids, you see, needle me once in a while about working for the government. And I said to them, I can't ever remember a day when I got out of bed and thought, geez, I hate to go to work today.
Right. So this was not just a job for you.
And I knew Peekaboo that had that attitude.
Right.
It must be a terrible burden on them to go through life and abhor what you're doing.
Yeah, hate every morning getting up, going to the job, and you felt
yeah.
very differently about your job.
I worked, I only worked for two agencies, the SEC and the Navy.
Right.
Both of them. I felt I had a challenge, and what I did was important.
Yeah. How bad?
And I went in as a messenger, and I came out at a grade 15 level.
Right.
And I get you couldn't beat the pension plan.
And just what you mentioned, going in as a messenger boy and coming out of grade 15, that really is the epitome of opportunity. I mean, you were given an opportunity to move up, and you took advantage of it. A lot of places don't offer that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Francis, I thank you very much for your time. What we're going to do with this is, like we said the last time we were out in Maine, is there'll be a transcript made of this, and we'll get that sent out to you, and you'll have a chance to look it over, read it over, make any changes or comments to it, and then get it back to Carla. It'll probably be a little while before that happens. I know that they're running a little behind on this, but I'll have Carla contact you when it's done, and she'll send this information out to you. And this actually, the transcription of this is going to go on, but also the actual recording that we've made today is going to be available so that you can go to, or your family can go to, the website and eventually pull up and listen to your and my conversation about these early years at the SEC. And the whole world is going to be able to do that shortly, later on this fall. So this is a very, very important part of what we're doing with the historical organization here at the SEC, and I very much appreciate your participation and patience with us in doing this interview.
I got in touch with an old friend of mine from the SEC.
Okay.
In fact, he preceded me there. He went in and worked for the SEC in 1935
mm-hmm.
when it was established.
Mm-hmm.
And then my note to Collar, I gave her his.
Okay, so there's another individual there. Good.
Jack Ferguson.
What's his name?
Jack Ferguson.
Okay.
Lives in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, really? That's where my aunt lives.
And he started the SEC, I guess, when as a messenger, when there was, I guess, just a handful of people there.
Okay, so he was sort of one of your buddies there.
He was a buddy of mine.
Okay. How long do you know? How long he was there?
He got caught in a riff, as a matter of fact, in 1953, I guess.
Okay. Well, so he was there quite a while, at least.
He was there quite a while.
Okay.
He was full riff in the war, so he worked right through the war.
Okay, good. Well, that would be good, because I don't think I have anybody talking to Bernard Meltzer in a week, but we don't have anybody, I think, that actually was sort of at that level working during the war. So I'll contact Carl and see if we can arrange to do his interview also. That'd be very helpful. So
another fellow, I see his name was a messenger with me, and he stayed there, I guess, his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Oliver App, APP, and he lives in Hyattsville. He's in Hyattsville, Maryland.
Okay.
Still alive.
Okay. Okay, well, good. I'll contact Carla about both of those individuals and see if we can arrange to visit with them, too. That would be great, because the more of these we get, absolutely, this is a very rich resource. And people, I tell you what, they go to these first. I mean, all the documents that we have are nice, but they like to hear from real people talking about their real experiences like you've done today. So
the SEC used to have reunion dinners.
Right.
And I don't know whether they knocked them off or not.
I haven't. I know that the fellow we talked to in Mr. Green, Lawrence Green, had a whole sort of a collection of the dinners that he'd been able to go to, and they were pretty nice dinners. But I don't know whether they're still having those or not. But you know what? Maybe it's time to have the historical society sort of kit one of those up and get some folks invited back if possible. That'd be fun to do.
Yeah, we used to go to. I always went to them. And,
right.
If I wasn't living in Washington, we'd go down to Washington, and they'd have them at one of the big hotels. And
right.
A big crowd.
Right. They did have huge crowds. I mean, we saw pictures of the people, and they got all the leading lights and all the average folks and everyone back there.
Yeah, some of the, what do you call it, the Wheel of Dealers.
The Mucky Mucks, yeah, absolutely. They were there, too.
You know, one of the commissioners was Donald Cook.
Mm-hmm.
And I can recall walking to school with him. He was going over to GW Law School at night.
Right.
Walking to school with him, another fellow named Cy Burley. The three of us had walked over to school from time to time.
Right.
And he was a digger and wound up as a commissioner.
Right. Right. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll contact Carla about this, and maybe we can get these other people lined up. But I'll make the suggestion that I know they're going to have some sort of a meeting either early in the year where the historical society is going to kind of get together and sort of unveil these maybe that would be a perfect time to try to arrange some sort of reunion for folks. Might be a good opportunity. I'll mention that to her.
Yeah, might get Ferguson out of Little Rock.
Yeah, well, that would be fun to get you all together for a little bit, too. So I'm going to let you go. I appreciate very much your time. Francis, thanks again for your patience and letting me do this one more time.
Who started this organization?
You know, I'm not sure. I think there's a number of folks who are sort of securities people who are interested in preserving the history of the SEC. And I know that Carla was sort of instrumental in the gallery. She had the idea for sort of making this gallery. And then, of course, when I got the opportunity to do this, they were doing two galleries now. They're doing one on sort of Kennedy's career, and then they're doing one on Douglas's career. Not just the career of those individuals, but the career of sort of how the SEC developed at the time. Because, of course, you don't have to talk about Douglas all the time. We can talk about, you know, the SEC itself, because it's really a story of the agency growth. So we're going to have another meeting in a few weeks, sort of a phone meeting, but the people who are doing this are really very committed to it, and I think this is going to develop and continue, so we're going to get a really, really good sort of historical resource that people can use, and this kind of information. I mean, I've done oral histories for a long time for people, and I'll tell you what, the people love this, and I get to talk to my students, I get to teach my students about the New Deal. And when I talk to my students about the New Deal, I don't have to say, well, this is what I think. I can say, you know, I had an interview with a fella in Maine, and he worked in the SEC, and this is what he said. And those students love to hear real stories from real people, not just something they read in a book. So this is the kind of stuff that is very, very important for certainly me, a historian, but also for the organization.
Well, let me give me a connection with Jack Kennedy. I call him Jack.
Right.
When I was at the SEC, right after the war, we formed an American Legion post there at the commission. I got a lawyer named Paul Davis, and he was hot with it. Well, that not being a typical American Legion post where you went Wednesday night and drank beer and told stories of the war, we had to do something for a reason to exist. And so Paul Davis came up with the idea that we'd have the speakers come into the SEC, and we can go in one of the hearing rooms and invite anybody in the commission when they come down and listen.
Right.
Anyway, then the idea came up, well, who we give first? Well, Joe Kennedy had been the first chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody said, well, his son is a freshman congressman, John F. Kennedy.
Right.
Let's see if we can get him. And so I was a secretary at the Legion, and I was assigned the task of calling his office and seeing if Kennedy would come over and talk to us. Well, being a freshman congressman, he talked to the moon.
Right, right.
And so I called over his office, and I got his secretary was one of his sisters, and she said, oh, I'm sure Jack would be happy to. Well, we set up the date and the time, and the day came for Kennedy to come over, and about 3 in the afternoon, I get a call from his sister that Jack needs a ride. And at that time, I wasn't aware of his back problem.
Right.
It was a misery of it. Nobody knew about it. Anyway, I searched around in my mind, who would get to go over and pick this guy up? And I didn't have that much time, so I decided I'd pick him up. Now, I was driving to work in a 34 Ford,
mm-hmm,
that had a fire in it, and the ribs of the ceiling were showing. The ground was going by you, and you could see through the floorboard. And it was a heap, but it went well, and it would start like a jackrabbit.
All right.
And all rewired.
All right.
So I went over there in his car to pick up Kennedy. And I remember going in his office, and it was very informal. I told her who I was, and she yells over her shoulder, Jack, Mr. Trainor's out here. And I hear a voice say, I'll be right out. And in 2 or 3 minutes, out comes this tall, skinny guy, and he strides across the floor and says to me, hi, I'm Jack Kennedy. And I took Kennedy. He didn't bat an eye about getting in this heap.
Mm-hmm.
He never said, "Where'd you get this pile of junk?" Very affable, and he asked what service I'd been in. I told him the Navy, and we swapped sea stories for about 15 minutes, and then I let him out. And that was my connection with meeting Jack Kennedy.
But you, you found him to be
very affable.
Yeah, real distant.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I like him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, I think that was part of his appeal, because he was, I mean, he had been through some experiences that he could relate, despite the fact that he came from a different background, but he could relate to your experiences in the Navy, and the, probably he probably even didn't worry about the hole in the seat. He was looking for, you know, the story of you as a man, so.
Yeah, and he was just a kid when his old man was chairman. I think he would have lasted about a year,
right,
and then he went off to become ambassador.
Right, right. I'm glad we mentioned that, because I remember that story when you talked about this the first time, and that was sort of one of the highlights. So that's great. Well, Francis, I appreciate your help. I appreciate your time. We'll get this to you in probably a few weeks or so, and Carla will send it out once they get it transcribed.
Okay, I'll give him my number down, and I'll probably be in South Jersey.
Okay, good. That way we can get it sent down there. And I'm going to follow up on both of these folks that you mentioned, and we'll talk to Carl about that and see if we can get those folks interviewed also.
And I'm going to give Carl the name and address of these two.
Good, guys. Do that. I appreciate it. Thank you again, Francis. I appreciate it. It was a great time seeing you in Maine, but it's again nice talk to you on the phone today.
You wouldn't want to be here today. It's all socked in.
Well, I tell you, it's been beautiful out here. We finally got some nice rains. We got about 2 inches the other night. The yards look green. We get cool nights. It's really, Minnesota is a nice place for me right now. I'm enjoying it a lot. So.
I'll bet.
Thanks very much. Have a great day, sir.
Big Ten football.
I'm kind of a Big 12 fan, but I like the Big Ten and Big 12 together. They're good conferences.
Oh, is that Nebraska?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good heavens, Maine went out there and played that.
I know. They played us tough, very tough.
Up until the fourth.
Yeah, game, they played like
the game.
And they won the next. Maine won their second game. And I know they played last week and won, so that's a good experience. And we didn't play very well, but I think Maine acquitted themselves very well out there. So
Maine prides itself in its song, the Stein song.
Right. And they've got a great hockey team too. I know. So
big in hockey.
Right. Right.
Get Canadian kids and Massachusetts kids.
Right.
Big hockey players.
Well, I hope they enjoyed their experience in Memorial Stadium, because it's quite an experience with 80 or 90,000 red-clad fans, and they're very appreciative. They're good fans. They applaud. I've seen fans applaud for a team that beat Nebraska, stand on the end of the.
Well, the paper said here that they applauded the main team.
They always stand up at the end of the game and congratulate the other team, no matter win or lose. That's what the Nebraska fans always do. They try to treat their guests with respect and accord them the honor they're entitled to. So, I appreciate your time. Thanks very much, Francis. You have a great day, sir.
You too.
I appreciate it. Bye.